If you could somehow create a scatter plot of dreams that American kids have for their futures, there would be big old blots on flying rockets and on racing cars. There might be a couple of dots on saving the world as well. But along the way, as those kids grow up, practicality takes a big chunk out of that wonder. Dreams change to reality, and most of us find ourselves on more grounded pedestrian career paths. Not, however, Elon Musk. Musk grew up in South Africa. He came to America, built a couple of companies. PayPal was one of them. And instead of taking the millions he made and skipping off to a private island someplace, he jumped into two of the riskiest ventures on the planet at pretty much the same time. And somehow, against the odds, it seems to be working out for him. I spoke to him a couple of years ago in Hawthorne, here in Los Angeles, at the headquarters of SpaceX. But this time, it was all about Tesla, fresh off the release of the electric car company's brand new SUV crossover called the Model X. We went up to Fremont, California, to tour Tesla's plant, a giant place. People riding bikes to get around, giant red robot arms welding and sparking all over the place. And the robot arms come to life. Oh, man. A metal stamping machine the size of a four-story building. It is kind of an assembly line wonderland in here. It is straight up a heavy industrial operation for which expectations are high. So on today's installment of Conversations from the Corner Office, the guy in charge.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Elon Musk, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
1,000 cars a week, right? Is that what you make here? Plus or minus?
Approximately.
Yeah. Is this where you thought you'd be?
I mean, it really depends when you say what.
5 years ago.
5 years ago? 5 years ago, I would have probably thought that we would have been here. But if you asked me at the beginning of Tesla, would I have thought that we'd be here, I would have said no. I thought we'd most likely not succeed. I thought we'd most likely die.
I'm pausing here just because that's an interesting thing for a guy running a big company like this to say.
Well, of course. I mean, the track record for car company startups is extremely poor. In fact, the only car companies in the U.S. that have not gone bankrupt are currently Ford and Tesla. Like GM and Chrysler went bankrupt.
Yeah, no, I was there. I remember that.
Yeah. So, you know, of the car companies today, just us and Ford that are, yeah.
So what's your worst nightmare then with this company? I mean, what do you think could sink you? Gas at you know, $1 a gallon, oil at $20 a barrel? What could do you in?
Well, I'm going to be clear that my view at the start of Tesla is not my view today.
Absolutely,
it's very different
that.
Because,
but as you
think
know,
sort
about
of like you know, your probability of existence when you're a tadpole is much lower than when you're a frog.
Yes,
thought they were a frog, but yeah, I mean, in the beginning it was very, very, very risky. Now I think we're in pretty good shape. We've got a car that was rated as the best car ever by Consumer Reports.
Better than the best car ever. I mean, you broke the scale.
Changed the scale, exactly. Right. We've got the all-wheel drive Model S now in production. I believe you drove the version of the 70 kilowatt that you drove was the dual motor all-wheel drive. It's actually the best all-wheel drive of any car because it's got a motor in the front and motor in the back.
Also, it went like a zillion miles an hour.
It's like very fast, but it's got better traction control than any gasoline all-wheel drive because it's got digital control between the front and rear. So instead of having just a mechanical shaft, the computer can adjust power to the front and rear at the millisecond level. And so it's got much more responsiveness than a gasoline all-wheel drive, which is mechanically linked.
I still want to know what's your worst nightmare about this company. If oil goes to $20 a barrel, or if, I don't even know, what keeps you up at night running this company?
Actually, to be honest, I don't get kept up at night too much these
days.
No,
come on.
No. I mean, I'm up at night, but not sort of, you know, working, certainly, but not sort of stressing super hard about the future. I mean, we have the Model X that we've got to obviously ramp up the production of. We've got a complete development of the Model 3. We've got the battery pack business, the, you know, Powerwall, Powerpack. Yes, there's a lot of there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but I feel at this point that Tesla's in a pretty solid position. You know, it's a question of how quickly can we bring an affordable electric car to market? How quickly can we bring affordable battery storage to market? But I think at this point, Tesla's in a pretty solid position.
I wonder whether the thing you're trying to do with this company isn't really make these awesome electric cars, but rather change the way we store energy in this society today, which is the energy problem of our lifetime. Is that a fair characterization of what you're trying to do?
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is help solve the sustainable energy problem in general. So in order for us to have a truly sustainable future, we've got to have sustainable energy generation, which I think will come primarily from solar panels and wind and some hydroelectric and geothermal and a few other things. And then you've got to be able to store that energy because the sun only shines during the day. The wind doesn't blow all the time. So you've got to be able to store that energy. That's why the stationary battery packs are very important. And then you've got to consume that energy in a sustainable way, which is why electric transport is important. Now, if you've got solar panels, batteries, and electric cars, you have a complete solution, which is very exciting. And then, of course, we recycle the battery packs. They're non-toxic. So it really is a complete and true solution for the future as far as sustainable energy is concerned.
Why cars and not, I don't know, like airplanes or something else? I mean, rockets are a whole different thing.
Yes, rockets.
Rockets are a whole.
You can't go
thing.
Electric, unfortunately. But aircraft and ships and all other forms of transport will go fully electric. Not half electric, but fully electric.
You're convinced?
Oh, no question. Of course, the electric is fundamentally more efficient than any kind of combustion engine vehicle. Because in a combustion engine vehicle, most of that energy is going into heat. So a typical gasoline car engine will be maybe 20% efficient. And so it's 80% of it is heat because it's a fire. It's like a series of explosions occurring in your engine that push cylinders down and generate a huge amount of heat. So it's very inefficient. And of course, it generates CO2 and nitrous oxide and sulfur oxides and other bad things that negatively affect our health. So you really want to go with an electric car because an electric car is like an electric motor is typically about 90% efficient at converting energy into motion. You think about an electric motor, it doesn't generate much heat. Combustion engine generates a lot of heat.
Yeah.
So then if particularly if you combine it with sustainable electric power generation from a solar panel, then you've got a great solution.
If you weren't doing this, running this company and running SpaceX, what would you be doing?
I would be, I do like the idea of an electric aircraft company. I think there's, one could do a pretty cool supersonic vertical takeoff and landing electric jet. That would be really fun. And
there's a temptation to say here, come on, you're just making stuff up.
No, but I have a design in mind for that. But I have too many things on my plate to do. And then, of course, there's the Hyperloop. I'd probably be working on that.
Which I personally am waiting for.
Right. And actually, there are a couple of companies that are working on commercializing the Hyperloop. The former president of Cisco, I believe, just joined as CEO of one of those companies.
So what is it about entrepreneurialism for you that gets you? Because clearly that's what's going on here, right?
I do think that creating a company to produce a product or service that people love that's very rewarding, no question. But what I'm trying to do is, at a broader philosophical level, is I'm trying to minimize existential risk in the future. That's what I'm trying to do.
So that gets me to something I've been thinking about. There's a question to put to you that's the Steve Jobs question. And bear with me for a minute, right? You're compared to him every now and then, visionary, transformational companies that you're running, but you always sort of got the sense that Steve Jobs just wanted to sell stuff, right? He didn't want to make cool stuff, but then he wanted to sell it. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you, with these two companies you're running, whether you want to change energy use in this country in our lifetime, and also, oh, by the way, transport humanity to Mars.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. Like I said, it's all under the sort of broader philosophical goal of minimizing existential risk. Trying to make the future good. That's my goal. Try to be as helpful as possible in that direction. Things have worked out a lot better than I expected. I sort of really expected things to not work out, actually. So,
do you ever look at the rest of us and think we just sort of don't get it sometimes?
I think people get it when, I mean, I'm not sure what you're referring to getting, but...
Well, this whole idea that you clearly are spending your life doing, which is minimizing existential risk.
I think minimizing existential risk is a fairly sensible thing to work on. And generally, if I explain it to people, then they agree that it is. I mean...
Because what's the counterpoint? No!
Right,
don't waste your time on existential
exactly.
risk.
No, make the future bad.
I mean, yeah.
But I think really, any company like that's making a product or service that the rest of humanity finds useful, or some portion of a fellow humans being find useful, that's a great thing. Like if somebody's making like a great a great watch great apparel or anything. Like if they're making great products that the fellow human beings love, I think that's awesome.
Talk to me for a minute about failure, about the value that you put on it and how much of it you tolerate in this company.
Well, I think like most people, I don't like failure. But I mean, if you don't... if you don't allow for some amount of failure, then it's very difficult to innovate. So, I mean, I do expect that we push hard to innovate, and that, and therefore, some amount of failure must be acceptable. Otherwise, you won't be able to, explore new territory.
So, all right. So let me ask you a more specific question. So the Falcon Wing doors on the Model X. First of all, was that your idea or one of your engineers' ideas?
I can give you the origin of the Falcon Wing door. I mean, like it's sort of a group idea. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I mean, it might have been mine. I think it was mine, but I think others had, maybe.
Okay, so that's a huge selling point for this car, right?
I think actually the funny thing is I think for the Model X, some people at first weren't like. Some people will buy the car in spite of the Falcon Wing doors, and some will buy and some will buy it because of the Falcon Wing doors. But once they get the car, I think almost everyone will like the doors.
So the question is, how many iterations, how many failures did you have in what is really a sort of a breakthrough kind of thing?
Yeah, quite a few failures actually. We tried several iterations on the door, and I'll tell you what we were trying to achieve. Why did we make the door at all? Because we could have just gone with a regular door that opens normally with a vertical hinge. And what we're trying to achieve is how do you directly access the third row? How can you step directly to the third row while still having child seats or kids sitting in the second row? Like very often, if you've got or almost any other car that I'm aware of, if you have child seats in the second row,
right, it's all over.
You can't get to the third row. And I experienced this personally when I got...
You and me both, pal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think like a lot of parents have experienced this. And so then you're like, wow, I've got this big SUV, but I can't use a large portion of it. And then also the storage space ended up being quite limited. If you had all three rows up, then the trunk was tiny. And so we wanted to fix those things. So in order to do that, you have to have a big opening. Now, there are really only two ways to have a big opening, really. You could have a sliding door, but a sliding door, like in a minivan, that's pretty good accessibility. But it constrains the external geometry, so it makes it planar along the side. And that's what makes it look not very good, generally. Like it really hurts the aesthetics to have a planar geometry along the side of the car. And then you've got to support the sliding door with three pins
with hinges and all that stuff.
And then the three pins you know, that creates sort of like a gash along the side of the, the car, which doesn't look good either. So then in order to have complex curvature and actually may have the car look good, you can't make it slide. So then you've got to open it in some way. But a traditional gullwing door only has one hinge, and so it opens up too far outward and too far up. And so the way that we solved this was by putting a second hinge, and thus calling it a gullwing door,
falconwing door
instead of a gullwing door, because it's got two independently actuating hinges.
Right.
And it opens up it opens up instead of outward, and it's able to assess the distance to other cars, look at the distance to the garage roof, and optimize the opening space so it won't hit your garage roof, it won't hit anyone else there.
And I'll tell you, it's amazing, and we'll have a video of it on the website, of your rollout thing, because it's extraordinary. But how many times did you send your guys back to the drawing board, your men and your women, and say, you know what, not good enough?
Well, the general concept...
5, 8,
10?
20?
Actually, I mean, the biggest challenge we had with the falconwing doors was the actuators. Whether we should have hydraulic actuators or electric actuators. And we started off with hydraulic actuators, but we weren't able to get a level of precision and really have it. We wanted the opening arc to be beautiful and precise and to have good force feedback. On so that if you did hit something, it would detect the force
and then stop
immediately. And it was a lot harder to do that with hydraulic actuators than with electric actuators. And then the hydraulic was more sensitive to changes in temperature. So if it was very cold, you'd get higher viscosity in the hydraulic fluid, and so you'd have more variability in the door opening. Whereas with the electric actuators... It really works well in very cold or hot temperatures, and the level of precision we're able to achieve is so great that you could sign my name with those actuators.
Not that anybody would ever do that. Which part of your job do you enjoy more? Getting out there with the engineers and getting your hands dirty, and I know the answer to this question before I ask it, or sitting in boring management meetings where you have to figure out the HR policy for this company? You default to engineering.
Engineering and design is, you know, actually engineering design is what I actually do spend most of my time on. Right now about maybe 3% of my time is spent on things like, say, interviews and media and that kind of thing. I think sometimes people think it's a lot more than that, but it's only, you know, maybe, you know, and like a yeah. Like not even less than 3%, probably, because it's less than a few hours per week.
This is so funny. I can see you actually doing the calculations now. I mean, you're more comfortable in that realm of quantified stuff.
I like engineering. I also like design aesthetics, I like creating products that people are going to love. I mean, it like really gets me fired up when somebody buys the car and they love it.
Yeah,
you know.
It's been a big couple of weeks for you. With the rollout of the Model X and the presentation, I wonder if you worry about this company and yourself being overexposed.
I think probably we are overexposed from time to time. That's not the reason I'm going. I'm going to be reducing my media activity to more like 1% instead of maybe 3 or 4%. But mostly because I need more time to focus on actually building the products, too much exposure isn't good.
Well, so I can't, you know, talking about you and having more time, I can't be the first one who's pointed out to you, look, Elon, you have really capable people working for you at SpaceX. You have really capable people working for you at Tesla. You don't have to be running both companies, man. Any thought of that?
Well, I think in the long term, I'm sure I won't be running either company because I'll be, you know, retired or dead or something, you know. So,
yeah, but you're what 45? You got a ways to go yet.
Yeah.
All right. So here's a better question: what would it take for you to stop day-to-day management of either one of these companies? And I acknowledge it. You know, Tesla's publicly traded, and you're talking to investors and all that stuff. And I get that. But yeah, as he looks up at me with a wry smile, but
I expect to be with SpaceX and Tesla for as long into the future as I can imagine.
What's the worst part of your job?
I mean, sometimes there are difficult personnel issues, and you have to deal with, you know, like lawsuits, and you know, yeah. like a natural state of any public company in particular is you get sued a lot. So you know, dealing with sort of like the negative stuff is obviously not fun. Doing creative work is a lot more fulfilling.
I want to talk briefly about the Gigafactory, the plant you're building out in Nevada that's going to build a bazillion batteries a year. I mean, it's like 500,000, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, actually, we 500,000 cars per year of batteries plus
cars worth of batteries per year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a lot of batteries.
It's a lot of batteries, and it is. Isn't it more batteries than like the world produces right now?
Yes. The Gigafactory that we're building is designed to have a capacity greater than the sum of all lithium-ion batteries for all purposes in the world today. So the total output of lithium-ion batteries for all purposes right now is about like maybe 33 gigawatt hours. And the Gigafactory's aiming for 50.
50. So you're kind of betting on the come there that the demand's going to be there for those batteries. You're building into a market that doesn't yet exist.
That's correct.
Doesn't that make you kind of go, is this a really good idea?
I'm confident it will exist. I think the demand for the Model 3 is going to be very, very good. As it is, we've got pretty good demand for the X and the S. And I think over time, the combined X and S demand is maybe 100,000 units a year, or maybe a bit more as we mature various markets. And then with the Model 3 and various iterations on that platform, I'm really confident that we can do another 300,000 or 400,000 cars per year.
Which is still minuscule in the global car universe.
Yeah,
right?
That's important to bear in mind. Yeah. Like 500,000 cars a year is only like 0.5%
right.
market share. So it's not, we're not saturating the car market.
I had a conversation with Alan Mulally, the guy who used to run Ford. I was talking to him 6 or 7 years ago, and I said, what would you rather do? Would you rather be, and this was when the car industry was starting to slow down, I said, would you rather be profitable, or would you rather be the biggest car company in the world? And he said, profitable in a heartbeat. We'll sell off and we will downsize. The analogous question to you is, would you rather build an electric car that is going to change society, or would you rather build market share and be one of the big three automakers?
Well, like I said, we are trying to change the nature of transportation. So so definitely scale matters, because more electric cars means more change in the way we transport people. I think in the case of Tesla, hopefully this is a false dichotomy. I suppose I'd rather be a low profitability company that's larger than a small company that has higher percentage profitability. But I like I said, I think that's probably a false dichotomy. I think ultimately it can be a big company that is profitable, although obviously we're not profitable today.
Last thing. You keep saying Tesla. The rest of us keep saying Tesla. Who's right?
Yeah, I think you're both right.
Oh. Country clubs and old passing. There you go. Thanks for listening to our latest Corner Office podcast. We've got some pictures and videos of the Tesla plant on our website, marketplace.org. Of course, you can find our daily radio show there as well, or you can catch it on a local actual radio station near you. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you next time. Me. This is APM.